these places, Iraq, Syria, etc. Many a times they were faced with problems or troubles. The trouble that they're going through now is not something that is just for the present moment. Rather, in the past also, there were quite a few incidents of war, troubles, problems. So there was a youngster living here, and he was trading some stuff, whatever it was. He was also trading in slaves. In the meanwhile, this war that is there's a war that is broken, and very seldom you'll find that people from this side coming that side and people from that end coming on this end. Nonetheless, some sort of trade used to continue in spite of the war. So this youngster, he saw an old lady coming in, and that old lady was accompanied by her daughter. And he says that, "I haven't seen something as beautiful as this. Can't resist." So he got talking to the old lady, because the old lady won't be so bashful as the young. See? So you can communicate. So the old lady says, "All right, I can make a plan for you, but you must see me ride for so much. About 50 or whatever pounds, whatever they were using at that time. So you must see me ride for that amount, and we'll try and arrange this girl for you." So the youngest says, "All right." The date and the time, everything is arranged. And al-mu'minu idha wa'ada wafa. So he had to now honor the promise that he had taken. Idea is that iman needs to be strengthened to such a level that the iman must detest and reject any evil. But if the iman cannot reject that evil, it doesn't have that type of strength, then you understand that iman is quite weak. Today it can't reject this temptation, tomorrow there can be another temptation. What guarantee and security you got that can reject that temptation as well? You find this when you have to purchase something, like a ticket or something for traveling, and the one that is in charge, he asks, you know, "What's your age?" So normally the law is that the one that is under 14, then he gets charged half. So just to qualify for that half ticket, you will say, "No, this child is about 10 years of age." So the question is just that iman that is so weak, that cannot reject this type of temptation, then what confidence you have in this type of iman? Tomorrow there will be an even greater temptation, and it will not hesitate in speaking a lie again. And may Allah Ta'ala forbid, if the iman is so weak and tomorrow there's a greater temptation and he needs to show a false identity, he needs to show that he's not a Muslim, he won't hesitate in doing that as well. See? So when the iman is strong, the yaqeen is strong, then come what, then he's not going to experiment with his iman. Otherwise, you begin to experiment with the iman. Little temptations, and you begin to experiment with your iman. Hazrat Imam Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam was giving an incident. One alim came into a town and he had to see the Nawab of that area. Like I explained early on, the Nawab is like how we have an Induna. So every town has one Induna, one Nawab. So he has to come here and get to visit the Induna. So as he comes into his presence, he sees that he's having his beard cut. And in the presence of that Nawab is another alim, local alim. This one is coming from the outside, and there is a local alim there, and he's there with him. So anyway, this alim is quite surprised that in the presence of an alim, and you having your beard cut, well, what is this business all about? So the Nawab looked towards the local alim. The local alim says to this Nawab, for you it is absolutely permissible that you shave off your beard. Because, see, your beard is very, very thick. Very thick. And then when it's very thick, then you'll have lice settling inside, see. When you have lice settling, then they're going to copulate and multiply, right? Obviously, when they're going to copulate and multiply, they're not going to make nikah and all that. They're going to make zina, right? And on your Mubarak beard, and all this zina taking place, astaghfirullah, how can it happen? So for you, it is permissible. So anyway, now this alim that is coming from the outside, he couldn't see much at that time, because there's an alim involved here, and in the presence of the Nawab, to shout him or to tell him anything may not be the proper etiquette. You see. So anyway, he finished his work and he left. And as they're going out, so this outside alim is talking to this local alim, but how could you make such an explanation? How could you give such an explanation for this? So he says, okay, you see, I don't know if you've been to India, you'll find the big, big drains, right? Sewage drains and all that, all exposed. They're not concealed. Like how we have concealed, they have exposed. See, when I have to come and meet the Nawab, then I leave my iman here in the drain, and then I come and meet. And when I finish with the Nawab, then I come and pick up my iman again, and I move on. See? So for any type of gain, material gain, then one can compromise his iman, he can give away his iman for any small type of gain, then that iman is not an iman that is thorough. How do you know that that iman will be able to defend you at any crucial point, at the time of a challenge, time some crucial point, that thing will defend you, protect you? Small little material gains and you can give up that iman, then there will be bigger challenges coming at your side. Then how will you be able to defend yourself? Hazrat Rahman should say ke mulyo ke tawil ke phatak itne wasi hai ke bade bade haathi uske andar ghus jate hai. Some people, when they make explanations for their wrongs, they give some explanations, and they can give such explanations, when you say an explanation, like a loophole, So they can create such loopholes for any situation that big, big elephants can come through. Anything can work out. You can make a plan for everything and anything. So this is the level of many people's iman. Anything they can compromise and experiment the iman for anything. So this iman needs to be built. Iman is not just knowing something. It is believing and accepting. like we are living in this country, right? So in order to be a citizen, you have to accept the leadership of a government, right? One is a person that knows of South Africa, for example. So in that country, he says, all right, I understand that there is a leader here. But he doesn't commit himself to his loyalty and to obeying him. So, all right, I do understand, but I'm not taking him as my leader. So he's an outsider, you don't mind. But if he's living within this country, then he'll have to accept the leadership. If he opposes the leadership, then you call him a rebel. Nowadays, they call him a terrorist, right? So that is the person that doesn't accept the leadership. So in the law of Allah Ta'ala also, then there isn't a crime that is as worse as terrorism, as rebelling. If you're living, then you must accept. And if you are living here and you reject and you're not accepting, you're opposing, then the law will work against you. So you living in the earth of Allah Ta'ala, and when you're living in this earth of Allah Ta'ala, then you have to accept Him, accept His rule, accept His law. You say, you know, you're enjoying everything, but you don't accept Him. You know Him, but you don't accept Him, then you are just like the rebel. In fact, even worse. Because in a government, the government doesn't own everything. It rules, right? It doesn't own everything. Here, everything belongs to Allah Ta'ala. Is there anything that doesn't belong to Allah Ta'ala? Everything belongs to Him. There isn't a thing that doesn't belong to Him. وَلِلَّهِ مَا فِي السَّمَاوَاتِ وَمَا فِي الْأَرْضِ وَلِلَّهِ مُلْكُ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ So when you do accept that everything belongs to Him, you do understand, then what prevents you from accepting His rule? Hence, now there is a need for securing this iman. Iman is gone quite weak. So this is a verse that has been quoted. How do you go about protecting your iman? See? Because like I say, the iman is gone so weak that it doesn't have the strength to reject any temptation. Right? You can speak a lie, you can deceive, just on account of some type of a temptation. Any temptation come your way and you can speak a lie. You can deceive. You can be dishonest, right? In the face of any temptation. That means you're not truthful, you're not honest. When you're not truthful and you're not honest, then you need to get honesty and truth into you. So that when you've got the truth and honesty, then in the face of challenges, then you can still remain absolutely firm. Then you don't waver, you're not shaky. You remain absolutely firm in the face of any challenge. That's what is needed. So overall, when you want something, you have to be in an environment, in a company, an environment. You find the right environment, then there is an improvement in you, right? Right. You want to be absolutely clean and pure, right? So you go to a pure, unpolluted environment. Don't you go to an unpolluted environment? You know, now there is a lot of sickness here. And there's a lot of pollution. Like, for example, someone is living in Meerwent, right? And the level of pollution is about the highest in the world, right? So you're breathing in all types of poisonous gases you are breathing in, right? And then the person has got asthma and he's got some type of breathing problems and all that. So the doctor will advise him that he must move on from here. Like he wants a very good... He wants his breathing to be good, respiratory system, he wants it very good. So, all right, then you move on to the Himalayas, right? Go right on the top, live there for some time and come back. So you'll breathe clean air, clean, fresh, pure, crystal, crisp air you'll breathe. And he will regain his energy. Now his breathing is gone right, his lungs are right. Now he comes back and he's capable. So what was required was a environment. You got that environment of cleanliness, then you'll find that you become clean as well. You begin to identify, you begin to recognize. But you live in sin, then you reach to reach yourself, or you take yourself to a point where the wrong seems to be palatable and enjoyable to you. Then the natural resentment that you have within you, the resentment is gone. Al-Mawlana Rumi rahmatullah alayhi says, like I say, he's a master of illustrations. Things have to be explained, but they have to be explained with illustrations. You just show the principle, that you don't grasp the thing entirely. So you have to give some type of an illustration where the person will begin to identify. So he says that one bhangi is called a toilet cleaner. But nowadays, you mustn't use the word bhangi in India because it's a criminal offense. If you use bhangi or chamar nowadays in India, tell anybody chamar or bhangi, then they will prison you or you have to pay about 100,000 rupees fine. Then before they should call the person chamar, it's alright. But now it's a criminal offense because they have come into the government, you see. As they have come into the government, and this word seems to be like a derogatory word, then you can't use it now. So this, in India, the style is different. You have classes, right? Caste and class system you have. So the one that is of the lowest class, then he does all his menial work. Right? Like he'll clean a toilet, all filthy work, clean the drains and all that, he will do it. So that whole people coming in their family, it's like the occupation. Right? So this chamar, he sees from a distance, there's a big crowd there, gathered around something. So he's also curious to know what's going on. So he cuts the crowd and goes and he sees one of his brothers there. His connection there, and he's lying fainted. What happened? Why he's fainted. They're trying to revive him. So someone is trying to revive him with oud, someone with rose, someone with amber, and someone with some nice other ether. But they can't revive him, they can't get him right. So he says, all right, I'll fix it up. So he went somewhere, got a stick, and got some cat suraj or something, he rubbed it nicely on the end of the stick, and he brought it. Cut the crowd again, said, no, don't worry, but you move out, I'll fix the person up. 2 minutes time, I'll get it right. So he got that and he put it next to the nose, besides the nose. In about 30 seconds, he got him right. Came up. Now they're all shocked. Hey, we tried. What we tried? You know, all modern methods we used, very, very advanced things we used. Couldn't get him right. And you got this stupid, silly, dirty thing and then you got him right. So his system was identifying with filth. Because of the filthy environment that he was in, his system had become comfortable with that. When he became comfortable with that, so he was identifying with that. And all this beauty and good and all things that are very advanced, his system wasn't identifying with that. With filth, it was identifying. And with goodness, it wasn't identifying. Right? When it wasn't identifying with goodness, so I had to bring in filth for him. So his system was identifying with that. When it was identifying with it, then in 30 seconds you saw he just got up. Right? Now what is the need? He reads such a low, okay, his system only wants to identify filth. So what's the need? The need is now to pull him out from this filthy environment, gradually to introduce him to a pure environment. That is, system then readjusts itself to purity rather than filth. Now, he's deteriorated, gone right down, because of the filth that he was living in. Filth that he was working in, living in, and passing his time in. So he needs to be taken out from that and introduced to purity and cleanliness. Then he'll see clean things, he'll breathe clean, he'll associate in clean. Eventually then his tabiat and his temperament will accept and identify with cleanliness. Okay. So the same happens to iman now. The iman is living in filth, in dirt, in pollution, in corruption, in dishonesty, in all type of corruption it is living in. So it became comfortable with that. And it became complacent with that, immune and complacent. It can't even perceive the filth in it. You know, it's reached such a low ebb that it can't even perceive the evil. Iman has gone to such a level. Right? That evil no more appears to be evil, like that suraj no more seems to be detestable now. So the same here, the suraj of evil, of corruption, of lies, of immodesty, immorality, illicit relationship, that evil of that is not perceivable any longer. You can't perceive it now. That seems to be comfortable. It seems to be relaxed. So every type of wrong seems to be acceptable. And then you find people then becoming even quite brazen about what they're doing, you know, robust, and the brazen of what they're doing. So he'll be wearing on type of a clown's clothing and coming to the masjid, 3/4 pants, jammies, and you've got a tight t-shirt, no topi, and you come inside. And if someone looks at him, you look at him, hey, what's wrong? What's wrong? You look at him, and he look back at you, hey, what's wrong? As though this is absolutely acceptable. So his iman has reached such a low, he can't see the evil in it. He can't see, you may be getting anger with the person, but the problem is the problem of the iman. The iman has reached such a low that it can't perceive the wrong. So that's why now the Tabligh Jamaat will say, now, we can't talk to you about this, but we have to talk to you in a roundabout way. And the way that we have to talk to you in is we have to change your environment. This environment that you are in made you immune, made you complacent, made you relate and enjoy filth and dirt. So we have to take you out to a pure environment, a masjid environment, clean environment, where there is only zikr, Quran Sharif, and where there is goodness prevailing. You know? So after some time, then you'll begin to perceive and understand. Right? Tabligh Jamaat is like a mobile khanqa. See, mobile. Now this is a stationary khanqa. That is a mobile khanqa. Unfortunately, you hardly find a khanqa operating for days on end, you know, after the month of Ramadan. In the month of Ramadan, the khanqa is operating. After that, you know of anything that is operating after that. You have one day's khanqa running. So that is like a mobile clinic came to commercial for one day. Now someone needs to be admitted in the high care or ICU. Can you admit him? That one day can you admit him? Can't admit him. So that's the problem now. We need to admit the person. Now the only people that have got it now is the Tabligh Jamaat people. It come out of 4 months, 5 months, 6 months, 1 year, whatever it is, right? So then you will be able to now identify, hey, all right, this is right, this is wrong. This doesn't seem right, this. I'm shaky about this. I'm very wary about this. I'm apprehensive about this, right? So this type of a taste, change in your taste, can come about when there is a change of environment. Where you are, you have to leave your environment, go to another environment, right? When you get into the pure environment, then you'll be able to cleanse your taste and your temperament of this evil temptation, you'll be able to do it. Otherwise, like you stay in the khanqa, right, for some time, then you'll find some type of an improvement within you. Now you go back to your workplace, now there's a girl that you shall talk to again. Right? Here in the khanqa, you felt, oh, it doesn't seem right, man. They're talking against this thing, it doesn't seem right. But you go back and there's a relapse. Right? So you need this type of staying all the time. So that ability to differentiate between good and evil becomes stronger and stronger, and it becomes seated deeply into you. Is not just for a day or 2 days. The iman is not required just for Ramadan. Is it only for Ramadan? Throughout the year it needs to last you. So you need that ability right throughout the year. Either then you go to the khanqa or the Tabligh Jamaat. These are the places, the avenues you go for like an environmental change, you know. An environmental change you need to have. So these are the two places that are available in this day and time. Provided the person is committed, he is thorough, he is sincere, and he comes with in with a firm, firm resolve, then it's easy for him to leave and give it up. It's easy for him to give it up. One youngster, his father is living in millions, you know, millions. Very, extremely wealthy. I came out, sometimes you come to the Khanqah, sometimes you come to the Jamaat. Came out, and as he came out, now after seeing that type of environment, he staged a change. His temperament became refined and clean. I was asking the elders, you know what, and this is the type of occupation my parents are involved in, which is haram, absolutely haram. So it's 100% haram, and then now I don't have the heart to go back. I'm going to go back now, what do I do? But then I was a youngster, 17 years of age only, then I don't have a home, what do I do now? And he's crying one way he's crying, I don't know what to do, I've got no recourse. Yeah, my parents are living out of haram, absolute, I know it. And I'm showing you the nature of the business. So there's nothing halal in their business. But then as a youngster, as myself, I need to find my feet still. Then what do I do? You see, this clothing that I'm wearing is all out of haram. I can't even wear this clothing. So he was in that state. The people that were around, the elders, whoever, they pulled out some of their clothes from their wardrobes and gave it to him. And they showed him, all right, this is what you would do now. Came a short-term relief plan. If they're living in total haram, then a small short-term relief plan they showed him. This is what you could do. What they explained to him is, all right, what you may do is you are absolutely certain that it is haram that they are living off. And then there's no other way, no other recourse. So what you may do is, how's your relationship with your parents? You know, they'll do anything for me. I'm the one only son, so they'll do everything and anything for me. So what you do is, you take an amount as a loan, right? Say you got a friend or something, or your father's friend, you take a loan from him, say 10,000, right? So the 10,000, Indian standards, it will work out as 3 months' groceries, right? So you buy that groceries with the 10,000, right? With the 10,000, so what you're eating off will be from that loan, you see. Then your parents can go and pay off that loan with their own wealth. However they're going to pay, that's another problem. So that haram doesn't come to your home. It goes to that person, that money lender. You know? The money lender will be giving that money, right? So what you have taken as a loan is halal. Right? It was 10,000. All your groceries, your needs are being met out with that. Then this money that is taken and loan is like a debt on you. Now you need to go and fulfill that loan. How do you do it? Then your father can assume responsibility. He can pay out the loan. So the haram money then in turn goes to that person who had lent that money. Preferably that person that is lending would be one baniya. So that baniya is not too particular about halal and haram. So that haram goes to his end, you see. But that was just a temporary measure, a loophole, just a temporary measure, because he had no other recourse, young boy now, and he came to his senses, he came to some type of understanding, what does he do, poor child? Yeah. So, this Khanqa, and this, similarly the Jamaat, this is what it does, it creates some type of realization between halal and haram, what is pure and what is impure, what is polluted and what is unpolluted, it creates some type of realization and some type of understanding, right? Without this mahol, without this environment, then you become immune, and then you become complacent. You become complacent, immune. You can't detect it. You can't perceive the wrong in it. So we're talking about this youngster and this war-broken area, and now he is falling in love with this girl, and that old lady made a plan for him. See, so every old is not gold. Understand? Don't think now old, they can make, they will take care. And more, Thami Sahib Ramda says that this is a big mistake people make. That if it's an old man, then they allow young girls to come and meet him, you know, to sit around his company or to meet him, either shake hand or whatever. Says, especially for an old man, And he is not supposed to be left alone with young girls also. I would say not only young girls, even girls about 6-7 years of age, they are not supposed to be with any stranger, let alone an old person. And he gives a reason. He says, you see, person is old now, 70, 75, he's like that, 60, 70 now. So he doesn't need to go through the whole motion to satisfy himself. He satisfies himself how? Just by looks. Looks, touching a little bit and looking and all that. And all that emotions in him, all are satisfied. Everything is finished, you see. Now the youngster has to work himself to a momentum and get his satisfaction. This old man, he doesn't look and touch a little bit and all that. And all that heat in him, everything gets worked up very quickly, instant. Like a microwave works very fast. Everything is settled, you see. So the old is even more dangerous than the young. See. We think, no, he's old now, so he doesn't have any feeling. That's how we reason. So, no, so the old got even sharper feelings than the young. And why I say even young, 6-7 years of age, girls of that age also must be guarded. Because stupid mothers, they don't know how to dress their daughters. See. They put on that type of fancy clothing, tight body-hugging clothing, etc. The body features are showing out, right? So the person that is seeing them, then he's getting tempted. When he's getting tempted, he wants to touch. You know, you get so many complaints coming in now that even the parents are complaining. Parents are complaining that my children are wearing this type of clothing, 7, 9, 10 years of age, and then mistakenly, that's the word they use, mistakenly, I'm touching, mother say I'm touching my son with lust, father say I'm touching my daughter with lust. But now that is because of the clothing that they are wearing, right? Because you wouldn't have this type of a complaint in the past. Why is this complaint only coming in now? In the past, they were wearing simple clothing. The olden day style was that, you know, what clothing was prepared for the bigger brother, then the heir of it is the brother coming after him. And then the third brother is his successor. So that cloth goes on. So there's nothing to show off. And now, just for a baby wear, you got this nachis and whatever. And that one, just one diaper or one small little thing, 100 rand, 200 rand, they'll knock you for it. So there's a lot of show business, right? And then the way money is being wasted, you bought all the expensive stuff, right, for the child. Clothing, whatever it was, say, the whole outfit cost you about 500 and 700 rand, right? And then, as the child grew out, and that whole 800 rand clothing is thrown, given away to someone or finish. I can't recycle it for the next child, can't use it. So, it shows that within our community, there's quite a bit of extravagance. There's no harm in passing on the same clothing to the second and the third and so forth and so on. But then the extravagant nature, the age of extravagance and the show business that has gripped our minds. Show business. Before the show business was only in women, that if they had to go to a second wedding, that wear a different outfit, right? Because the woman would have spotted her, you know, the same thing you're wearing now and you wore the same one in the last nikah and walima. So she'll get a fine for that, you know. So because she has to save herself from that fine, so she has to wear a new outfit. Every new walima or nikah, she has to wear something different. Now it is within children as well. Right? Hazrat says that ye to kamal ki alamat nahi hai. You know, dressing up and polishing up, etc., all that is an indication that that person is very deficient, either mentally or either religiously, he is very, very deficient. He has to posh up for every occasion. Because jo ahle kamal hote hai, people of perfection within religion or intelligence, then they don't have their eyes focused on this thing here. They look at kamal. They look at achievement and perfection. Achievement and perfection is either in understanding and ilm or amal, one of the two. Either in your deed or either in your understanding. The rest of it is just to conceal your private areas. What is clothing? To conceal you. Yuwari su'atikum warisha. it is just to conceal yourself. All right, conceal yourself, put a little bit in a presentable manner. So you don't have one bed sheet around your body. Something in a presentable manner you have, it is enough. But now this type of a trouser, so this type of a shirt, and that shirt must go with this shoe, and then the shoe must match with the curtain, and the curtain must match with the ceiling, and the ceiling must match with the floor. Where did they get all this thing? Really, sometimes I see someone or I go into that home, everything is matching, you get a headache after that. Everything is just simple now, this is any odd color. Right? You feel comfortable, so now this is home. Right? But everything is matching, everything to the T, then you think now, have you come into a home or a museum? You know? And the museum, the law in the museum, you mustn't touch anything. Just see and pass on. So you come to a museum, it's not a home then. Home is you can touch, you can walk around, it's a little bit freedom, you got freedom and all that. But everything is designed and a state of the art, then you feel afraid to even touch these things. So when you live that type of a life, what have you done? You have stopped mehman from coming into your home. Because people that come, they become very, very particular. Then the children are trained in that way. To become very, very particular. The children are trained to come, to become very, very particular. They become very particular and they become, as we say, you know, paranoid about hygiene and all that. They become paranoid. When mehman just came into the house, and as he just left, immediately you brought the mop and you're mopping the place. One, two particles of sand must have come, you know. So that must be mopped off, cleaned off. Mehman just came now, and he presented some tea or something, straight he must wash the thing, and then dry the thing up and straight away leave it. So that the ethos of the museum doesn't change. Museum must look like a museum. Now imagine if your child is growing up in that manner, so he subscribes to that type of thinking, right? When he subscribes to that type of thinking, then you don't want mehman and guest to come in. When you want guests to come in, then you're a little bit casual about these things. Not that you're living in a filthy home, but you're a little bit casual. They come in, all right, they came in. So you're not paranoid about hygiene. Clean everything in its place, but not to the level of paranoia. You know, what's happening? So you've got an obsession for all these things here. So then you don't want mehman to come in. In Arabic, in the Balaghat al-Waziyah, they teach that like a darabul amsal, you know, phrase. Ashku ilayka qillat al-jurzan. I'm complaining, there's no mice in this home. Complaining, there's no mice in this home. Like, it looks funny how you say there's no mice. You'll be happy celebrating, there's no mice. Now what he's saying, that this house, there's nothing to spare for a mice also. In other words, everything, they're very protective over everything, every small little thing. They're very, very protective, they're very, very particular about it. So the mice doesn't even have one crumb to eat. There's no cockroaches, no mice, nothing in this house. So it takes you to the point of miserliness. A Muslim home must be an open home, right? We need to be parda conscious. One is this aspect of entertaining guests, right? It must be an open home. The second thing is this, that there must be an environment of warmth in that home. Right? And what was in my mind was, the third thing that we have forgotten and we need to change, we need to correct, right? And it's becoming also a big problem, is how we are designing our homes. See, our olden style homes were designed correctly, with an Islamic ethos. Now the way it's designed is not with an Islamic ethos, it's with a kuffar ethos. Because the homes are designed open plan. When we talk of an open plan, I've been some homes. So from the dining room, from the lounge, you can see the dining room, and you can see into the kitchen. So the woman can see the men, and the men can see the woman. So is there any privacy? You know, there's a woman around, then if there's some respectable man, he doesn't want to even talk too loudly. Because he doesn't want them to hear. Then he can't frequent that house, because he's going to sit in that house, He knows everything is open. Women are going to listen. When you're talking to men now, you want to talk a little bit freely. Right? Some things are not appropriate for women to listen to. So within a circle of men, you are talking about these things. It's all right. But now if you know there's a woman that is listening to you, then you don't want to talk too loud. Now this type of a plan really is not our ethos. It's not our style. It's not our way. But then we saw some others doing it, you know. And then it appealed to us. So he's doing it. And because it's in the style, he's doing it, so we must do it. Our style is different. We've got a style of respect. That is why, though it's a topic on its own, although in principle it may be permissible to get married to a kitabi, but the ulama will say that you shouldn't be doing it in this day and time. To kitabi woman, like a Christian or a white woman, etc. Remember, all white is not bright. Doesn't have to be white. Don't have to be bright to be white. People think that. There's two dimensions to a person, the inner dimension and the outer dimension. It's not just one single dimension that you look at. Right? And you're going for color, many a times she's not right from within. She doesn't know how to take care of the house, how to take care of the children, what to do to remain. She doesn't know that. Apart from that, now this aspect of modesty, etc., it's alien to them. And not only from now, from the time of the Sahaba Kiram, when you look into the tarikh and history, you know, then you'll find from that time, this type of a Western white woman, that time wasn't anything like Western, but white woman, right? Roman, they call them Romans, white woman, right? So there wasn't that element of modesty in them. So therefore, at Umar radiallahu anhu, you'll find his letters written to some Sahaba Kiram. You got this woman in your marriage, just divorce them. لِقِلَّةِ حَيَائِهِنَّ Because they don't have haya, they don't have shame. They're not brought up that way. That concept of modesty and shame doesn't feature in their lives. Right? And when I say it doesn't feature in their life, you will see it yourself. Just open your eyes a little bit and you will see it yourself. See, in a collecting place, in a public area, you'll find like an airport or something. In a public area, right? You find it's a woman, she's embracing another man's husband, and that husband is shaking hands and embracing another man's wife, and it's going on, and they don't mind. That's part of their culture. So, in our circles, is that acceptable? If your wife now shakes hands and she embraces someone else, hugs someone else, and that person hugs your wife, is it acceptable? Not acceptable to say, hey, what's wrong? Make up your mind, you know. What are you doing? You're becoming so intimate. How can you do such a thing? So you'll make such a big noise. But for them, it's an acceptable norm. So they don't have shame. And the reason why they don't have shame is they are swine eaters, you see. And that swine doesn't have any shame at all. There's no such a thing. Like every other animal has some self-respect. Right? So if it is its partner now, you can't interfere. And the swine, it happens, okay, they are such, you know, there's no such a thing like ghairat, self-pride or self-respect, there's nothing like that. So if one is they're mating, you know, then you'll find a whole line queued up. Males are queued up. This thing finishes up and I'll be the second one, third one, fourth one. Like how, you know, you're queuing up to wash your hands. So same, they don't have that self-respect. Are you eating that, then eventually you become like that. You behave like that. I have seen some reports, you know, they show about elite areas, flats and all that, elite areas. And they show, after DNA reports and tests and all that, find that in a flat of about, say, 500 people residents, a big flat, maybe there's one who's legitimate. Otherwise, this person's wife slept with that one, that person's wife slept with this one here, all mixed up, and this is how the child was born. Now, you're fathering the next person's child. It's not your child, it's someone else's child that you're fathering. So, they don't have shame, they don't have modesty at all in them. So, what we are talking about, we branched off, you know, I spoke about homes. And the homes, we need to have some level of modesty. So what it takes to have modesty. That's why I say that if you are designing new homes, the one thing we should be doing, one is to see the males and the female, right? In, when we were studying in Deoband and all that, they used to have the home designed in such a way, they used to call it Mardana and Zanana. This is a men's quarter, this is a female quarter. You feel so comfortable, relaxed. Now with a men's quarter, they'll have a small toilet attached. Because if a mehman is coming into your house, what he needs? He needs a place to sit and eat, and he may need to go to the toilet. So if it is attached, then it's very easy access. Right? And if it's not attached now, that man has to be diving and, you know, working himself, maneuvering himself within the woman, going to the toilet, coming back. But if it's just accessible, it's so easy. He doesn't have to ask permission, just say, go to the toilet, go and wash up, and come back. Now, this is an Islamic culture, that we are parda conscious, we have modesty, we have shame, we have respect, and they don't have it. Again, from the, you know, from times before also, you look in this public baths. Why was it that Islam had stopped the use of these public baths? Because in the old, when people went to a public bath, then they would undress completely. All men and everybody's bathing together. All naked. Nanga baranga. All up. So one alim from India had to go to one place and they were bathing like that. So he was very ashamed and he put on his lungi. And then he bathed. He had to have a bath for the Jummah. There's no other place, so he had to have a bath now. So the other people that were around said, "Bhai, you know, different to others. So why are you concealing yourself? They're also Muslims." So they tell him, "But you're not any different to others. Then why do you need to conceal yourself? You don't have anything different." So he said, no. He was quite a brave alim. So he said, no, I got something that you don't have. Therefore, I need to conceal it. What have you got? I've got shame. You don't have it, I have it. And on that shame, I need to conceal. See? So these are an integral part of our faith, our deen, because when the hadith speaks about iman, but so many branches Islam, iman is God, and with particular mention, well, hayau shu'batun min al-iman. Iman is sab bid'un wa sab'una shu'batan. And then he says, well, hayau shu'batu min al-iman. And hayau, modesty, is a branch of faith. From all the other branches, why did Islam prefer to speak about shame? It's so important. So important, shame. You got that, you're protecting your faith. You don't have that, everything can go. The boy won't have it, the girl won't have it, it'll just go. I was explaining previously also, you know, that you will never have this type of a question coming in. A woman asking just after Ramadan or in Ramadan about masturbating. And now it's a common thing. Now they are associating with who? In the schools. And even if they go to madrasas, whatever it is. But then all type of people are coming into the madrasa. So one is exchanging views and ideas, what I'm doing. That one is saying, I do this. And this one is, you know, you didn't experiment this. Hey, this experiment this, man. You know, like how they experiment recipes and all over the phone. So they talk about these things as well. So then this one thinks, well, I'm missing out big way, man. Hey, she's enjoying herself and I'm missing out. So then she's experimenting in this. She's experimenting in this and her rosa is going. And then it's completely immodest, you know. Men do these things here. I don't justify their stance. But women are supposed to be having a high level of modesty and shame. Right? Not that the guna is any different for a man and a female. But normally women are more modest, more shame, more bashful. And then they get involved with this type of sensual pleasure, etc. Really, you need to drown yourself in shame. You know? So, these aspects of shame and modesty, it's very, very important. If your shame goes, like the hadith says, that it is a branch of faith. When your shame, your modesty goes, then in any time your iman can go also. Finish. Iman is on the block now. When the shame left you, then iman can go as well. In this day, in the home, I'm talking about home, you know, the problems. two problems I showed you about the home. The third is this, within the home, then we give the child license to do anything and everything. Give him a phone, smartphone, video, etc. He's got access to do anything and everything. So where is his shame then? Where is his modesty? What happens to his modesty? What happens to his shame? It's gone. He's young now. He doesn't know about modesty. You get now people coming in and they're complaining about their children, 13, 14 years of age, and they are looking at things, porn and all that, what they're not supposed to be watching. And they'll be watching right from around Maghrib Isha time right till the morning. They got such an appetite for these things here. From the Isha time, right till the morning, they can carry on watching. So one is you are destroying the shame. When you're destroying the shame, iman is going. When the iman is going and the shame is going, the night is being spent in this manner. In the day, how can they concentrate in work? They can't concentrate because they didn't sleep well. And even if they slept well, their minds are all clouded and polluted. When their minds are totally polluted, how can they focus on work? So in the education also these children will go backwards. Just because of shame, in the understanding, in the intelligence, in the reasoning, everything they will go backwards just because of shame. So what an important thing this is now. The youngsters, when it's become to an epidemic level, then my suggestion is, one is the parents should be concerned about this care. How do I reorganize? Because I can't get the whole community right. You can't. Can you get the whole community right? Thinking right? You can't. People tell you, "By it's my private affairs. Leave it to me." Right? Because we have worked with this type of cases. You see, like if a situation where a non-Muslim is flirting with your daughter, right? You go and talk to them and say, "It's my private affair. You don't get involved in this thing here." They don't want you to get involved in. So the same, they don't want you to get involved in these things here, right? So one is the parents have to come in and see into their children's private lives. You know, Bessie Zewa Mahathana was giving some advice that until the child is not married, then there must be total transparency in his wardrobes, in his bags, in his possession, even the living room. Don't give him a key to the room. The mother or the father can walk in at any time and see what's going on at any given time. Number two, the jihad for the youngsters will be, they should form circles and think now, how do we protect our modesty and shame? Because it will take us back in our iman. It will rob us of our education. It will rob us of our future. And it will rob us eventually that of our manhood as well. Okay, we won't be able to fulfill the duty of manhood because we'll be weak now. Now the youngsters need to sit in circles and groups and think now, how can we protect this? What jihad we can do in this respect, you know? In protecting the shame, protecting modesty, thereby in turn protecting the iman. That will be the jihad, that will be the great thing. If they can do that, you can say, you know, the youth have done something. Today's youth, in the 21st century, they have done something. You see where you say that, you know, you get sawab for 100 shaheeds. لِسُنَّةِ قَدْ أُمِيتَتْ بَعْدِي. When a sunnah is being trampled, people have completely forgotten about it. And then you revive it. Now this is the thing that is being killed. Modesty is being killed. When it's being killed, you bring up this modesty again. Can you imagine the sawab you're going to get? Because it's talking about an important, integral part of faith. Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam was most bashful when you talk about the hadith. مِنَ النِّسَاءِ فِي خُدَرِهِنَّ. Approximate words. It was so bashful and so bashful. But can you imagine what a great sunnah this is? And then youngsters are getting together, all right, we need to work out something. One in every youngster group, you'll find someone is a little bit more forward. Say, let's pick a plan, let's go for a bribe, for a barbecue. So he's a little bit more forward. And when he speaks, then everybody listens to him. So the same forwardness, can't we use it for deen? Can't we use it now? Think within the circles, and this is the thing that is lost. And how can we rejuvenate? And how can we bring this again in our circle? Then from one circle when we won, we move it on to the second circle, to the third circle. Then we pledge within ourselves that we're not going to look at phones. So how to secure this? So now we got phones, right? So we'll have a monitor on the phone, And the password is shared by our friends also. So they also checking onto our phone. Did we check any time? Did we see any time? They got a monitor, they got a memory. They're checking through what's going on, right? So in this way, we are protecting one whole group of people, whole class of people are getting protected. Their iman is strengthening, right? They're becoming more intelligent and capable. Their future lives are being guarded, right? Then their manhood is also being secured. So many things you are guarding. Now that person says, hey, you know, what a wonderful thing we did. You know, you are a brave and a half, you lead this whole thing here, and you saved us so much of destruction, so much of misery. We compare ourselves now with these people that didn't take these precautionary measures, their lives are in a shambles. Okay? So there are some things that our youth also can invest in. You know, if they can just think correctly, then how much they can invest, what sawab they can get. Though they're not in Syria or in Iraq, but they're getting the reward of 100 shaheed. See? Because in this age, I explained previously, what's going on is that the face of Islam is being mutilated. And I say something seriously, it's being mutilated. And you need to bring it to its original shape. So we need to pull our resources together, think for youngsters, think for middle age, how can we just reshape this thing here? You know? And when we talk to youngsters friendly, respectfully, lovingly, and we're giving them their places, right? With respect, then they will take. It's not that they are so defiant and so stubborn that they will never give in. But you speak to them nicely, approach them nicely, give them a meal or something or bribe what they like, you know. And show them some halal alternatives, all right, you're not going to do this, we'll take you for a ride, you know. So you can't be so dry, only masjid, just stick there now, no, nothing else, look down, stick down, the masjid, can't do anything. So you're going to make it too dry, that they're not going to listen to you. So all right, we'll take you for a drive, take you to the Ushaka, or something where, you know, it's halal, no haram in it, you know. Hardly any haram or no haram, and we take you to that type of an environment. So they feel, all right, you know, all right, they took us and they saved our youth, but they also respected the cheer in our heart. We are youngsters, we are children growing up, so we got some excitement, so they respected our excitement as well, and they saved our youth. So they'll appreciate the elder. And the elder will feel fulfilled, mashallah, at least my youth, I got them going. See, they are in good homes, there's no comebacks, there's no rocky marriages, all these things is leading to this. I think from 10 marriages now, 10 marriages to be very safe, you get approximately 3 or 3.5 where there is an abuse of a cell phone, abuse of a phone, and the wife is phoning in, okay, this is what's happening. And sometimes it is the other way around, the husband is complaining, okay, we're into the marriage, but she's interested in someone else. I'm in love with her, but she's interested in something else. What do I do? All these things starting, stemming from this place. So what a big role you will play, you know, if Alhamdulillah, you have some people that are middle-aged, 35, 40, and they're very good with youth. They know how to handle them. Give them some nice, exciting stories and all that. Take them for a ride. Take them to Kruger National Park or somewhere, whatever. Camp them up there. It's an outing. They can see animals, all that, whatever else, halal things. Get them into namaz, get in a halal pastime. But they're saving their youth. See, it's a time that we need to look how to guard the youth. And then talk to them on personal things, you know, how they need to take care of themselves. Now in this etiqaf, one person came and complained. In fact, not more, about 3 people came and complained. That I go to this places here, unfortunately the person is a little bit handsome. So now I go there, sometimes you'll find one girl following me in 3, 4 different places. I'm here, she's coming and trying to entertain a conversation with me. And there again, she's trying something else. The third place and the fourth place. So, you know, you get this type of youngsters, or this middle age, you know, 35, 40, but they're good with youth. To talk to them how to overcome these hurdles. All right, you did this. This is a situation. How do you overcome it? How do you overcome the situation? Now, these youngsters, when they grow up now, they'll be so thankful. You guarded us. You showed us some light. You know, our career was saved. We went for education, whatever we went for, we stuck to that. We didn't get caught up in the crowd.
saved our iman. You know, you made us better husbands. So we're very thankful and appreciative. You saved our iman, you saved our deen. So the youngsters can think about it, and even these people that are a little bit good with youngsters. Like I say, don't make it too dry. When they are doing this type of thing, you take them for a drive. Or take them for even wimpy ice cream, take them somewhere there. Let them enjoy and excite themselves. But in the meanwhile, you're taking care of them. Taking care of them, they'll be so appreciative. See the need to guard the iman. Ittaqullaha wa kunu ma'as sadiqeen. So how are we going to, what steps are we going to take to guard the iman of these children? Sometimes I have to explain these type of topics, you know. So, you know, if you're on a little bit of a very hard note, then say, but hey, you know, nowadays, we're coming right now. So there's very few places that we can go and entertain ourselves. So that statement doesn't sound nice, right? Because he thinks, oh, nothing, I can't do anything. The place of entertainment is a mall or a hall or whatever other else, right? But now if you create some type of an entertainment for them, we pull them out from the vice, but we showed them an alternative as well, you know. So they feel within their hearts that, you know, Islam, we can, you know, have some entertainment, some joy, some happiness. And you have a group talk, how to program yourself, you're studying, how you must dedicate yourself, and when you're going to be a regular on your namaz, everything else is going to fall in line, everything will work out right for you. So they begin to think, you know, this person is balanced, he'll show a way for us. You know, otherwise, you know, you do your schooling, come to the madrasa, become a mulana. Now, the mulas will be overpopulated then. You know, there is a thing like statistics, right? Like, you know, Spingo Beach, for example, has got, say, a population of 4,000 people, right? So if you've got 10 doctors, it's too much, right? 5 doctors, in fact, is enough, right? Now, for that 4,000 people, you've got, say, 1,000 doctors. What do you say? No business for them. So there is need to be some type of a balance. Right? Hazrat Ji Ramadhan used to say it very beautifully. Hazrat Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, they saw life. And when they saw life, so they would talk very practically realistic. He would say, Har aadmi ko alim, hafiz, shaykhul hadith, mufti, mulana banna farz nahi hai. Lekin har aadmi ko muttaqi banna farz hai. For every person to become Mawlana, Hafiz, Sheikh Uladiz, Mufti Sahib, everything is not farz. But everybody must become muttaqi. And the reason is obvious. If the person became a Hafiz or Mawlana, but he doesn't know what it is to respect his parents, what will you say? He lost out. When do you say that? But on the contrary, you made him muttaqi. He got the not that he doesn't have the necessary ilm, he has the necessary ilm, but he's muttaqi, so he knows who is his parents. He knows what is a wife. He knows what is children. He knows rights. He knows duties. Right? He won't hurt anybody. He won't even traumatize, even you know, mentally traumatize anybody, physically, emotionally, in any way, because he's got taqwa. When he's got taqwa, he'll be so respectful of the next person's feelings. Now, in our time and day now, education is like, you know, is like an obsession. Must become hafiz, must become alim or alima. The other side of it, the application of it, the values are in the child that, you know, we're not too concerned about it. So, you know, life will teach him all that. But the theoretical thing that comes into the eye of the people, for that, then we are making all the effort. Why? Because that comes in the eyes of people. But this thing, everybody doesn't perceive it straight away. They'll see it in time. But this one, yeah, your son is a hafiz, mulana, yeah. So the theory is given, but what about the applying of the practical dimension of it? Are we applying the thing? So this is a need of the time. And like I say, Tabligh Jamaat, they will make tashkil for that, right? Yeah, there's no tashkil, but all of us know our potential, right? Some people are good with youth. They know how to throw them up, they know how to rally the youth, but rally them in the right. But look at the sawab. Ajrun miyati shaheedin. You got the reward of 100 shaheeds. You want to invest in that. There is some pain also. Some pain, you take out your weekend, some of your time, get around them, talk to them. make them a little bit amused, but then rally around them and bring them in. Bring them in. Otherwise, you won't want to see your child or someone else's daughter running with a Hindu or a non-Muslim or going to a casino, etc. You won't want that to happen. Now, one person tells me, he went to the casino, so he went to perform his namaz. Now you get all chakrams you get. You know. So he went to one corner to perform his namaz. So that attendant is saying, yeah, your people come here. Even those, you know, those women that wear that black and all, you know, they also come here. Now what story is giving? What story is giving? He says, our women coming in there, men are coming in there. You know, to what level we gone to? So that's why I say now, what is the Tabligh Jamaat? They doing their work. But if one group can come in, you know, come in and very gradually, very subtly, to work with this youth here and motivate them, rally around them, get them moving. Now, what coolness you'll bring to the eyes of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, I ask you. Comfort. Rather than now, just every Sunday now, it's culture, let's go into this, the mall now, or, you know, that they got the fitting here for that bathroom here, this looks very smart, let's go look for that. Or this thing has got this type of a tile, let's get, you got everything, I work on these people here. Man. Work on these people here, you'll save a life. You'll save iman, you'll save deen. This thing about is just an ornament. It's just cosmetic. Nothing beyond that. So we make an intention, inshallah. That we look after our youth. After it's our own youth. Tomorrow, that boy is going to get married to your daughter and your son is going to get married to his daughter. You preserve them and you preserve the coming generation. Haven't you? Isn't it a beautiful investment? Because it's going to happen. You can't say now your child is just going to remain with you. She'll have to get married or he'll have to get married. If you worked on the youth, right, they're going to intermarry. When they're going to intermarry, then you looked at the youth, Allah will look at you favorably as well. Let's go.
Some of the adab pertaining to the masjid as well as clothing. That with regards to the masjid, before coming to the masjid, it's preferable that a person performs wudu at home and then comes to the masjid, as there is extra virtue and thawab in this. And then when a person comes to the masjid, then he should not be rushing and running, but rather he should come calmly with ease. And then when removing the shoes, then one should remove the shoes and place them on one corner or in the shoe rack, not right at the entrance where people would be walking, as this would cause inconvenience and taklif to others. And then when entering the masjid, then you enter with the right foot, sending salawat and durood upon Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam and reciting the masnoon dua, Allahumma aftahli abwaba rahmatik. And then it's also preferable that you make the niyat of nafil i'tikaf, so that the duration of time that you are spending in the masjid would also receive the thawab of i'tikaf. And if it is not makruh to read namaz at that time, then also perform two rakats of tahiyatul masjid. And then when you come to the masjid, then start filling the serfs from the front of the masjid. That is the habit and common that people would normally sit at the back or on the sides to lean against the wall. But a person should start filling in the gaps from the front serf of the masjid. And then one should not engage in any worldly discussion or any vain talk whilst in the masjid, but he should use his time valuably and engage in some dhikr, tilawat of the Quran and Majid, etc., some ta'lim, etc. And then, if a person is not in i'tikaf, then it would be incorrect for him to eat in the masjid or sleep in the masjid or do any other worldly activity in the masjid. And then when a person then leaves the masjid, then he should leave the masjid with the left foot, also again sending salawat and durood upon Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, and reciting the masnoon dua that Allahumma inni as'aluka min fadlik. And then also it is all another adab that before entering the masjid, you should apply ithr to your clothing and remove any foul smell from the body or from the mouth, and also wear such clothing when coming to the masjid that is according to the etiquette of the masjid, that you should not be tight-fitting clothing or clothing that is not Islamic, but rather a person should wear such clothing that has that fits with the etiquette of the masjid, and it also would be presentable if a person has to appear before someone that is respectable and someone that is honorable. And some adab and etiquette with regards to clothing, that as Muslims one should never feel ashamed to wear such clothing that would identify himself as a Muslim. That whether he is in public or whether in secret, that wearing his topi or wearing his kurta or a turban, so one should never feel ashamed to identify himself as a mu'min, as a Muslim. And then the clothing that a person wears should not be tight-fitting or body-hugging, nor should it be so thin that a person's body, the skin would be revealed through the clothing. And the best clothing is the clothing of the pious. In our times, it would be wearing the kurta, wearing topi. And in this way, a person would be fulfilling the sunnah of clothing. And then the garments for a male should not flow below the ankles, whether it is the kurta, or whether it is the trouser, or whether it is the lungi. But it should all be above the ankle, or the best would be halfway to the shin. Or if that's not possible, a bit lower, but not lower than the ankle. And then when a person is wearing clothing, then he should adopt such colors that is also respectable and presentable. And for a male, he should not wear such colored clothing that resembles the color of females. But as it is common that now males also start tending to wear brightly colored clothing or pink colored clothing. So this is also against etiquette of clothing. And also the opposite, that women should not wear such clothing that imitate the clothing of men, that where they would wear tight-fitting trousers or very short shirts and clothing. So this is also incorrect. And then when a person is undressing, then he should recite, take the name of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, Bismillahi walhamdulillah, or say Bismillah, as this is a form of guarding himself from the evil glances of shaitan whilst undressing himself. And then when putting on clothing, then one would also recite the masnoon dua, that Alhamdulillahi alladhi kasani hada, وَرَزَقَنِيهِ مِنْ غَيْرِ حَوْلٍ مِنِّي وَلَا قُوَّةٍ.